The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2022, Living Liberation, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join or making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, you can visit libraplanet.org/conference.
Hi, my name is Jose Gatica. I'm from Chile. I'm a developer and musician. I play guitar sometimes. I'm very happy to be here. And I want to present my personal hero, free software hero, Rubén Rodríguez. Hi, Rubén. This talk is titled Hacking My Brain, Free Virtual Reality Implementations and Their Potential for Therapeutic Use. And we'll be presented by Rubén. Rubén is founder of the Triskel GNU Linux distribution project and other non-profit. He has contributed to freedom and privacy-oriented web tools, such as GNU IceCat, GNU LibreJS, and JS Helter. Today's talk is all yours, Rubén. The room is yours.
Welcome. Right. Well, thank you. It's been a while. This is my 10th Libra Planet. I gave talks at Libra Planet for a few years in a row, and then I joined FSF, so I had to stop. It's kind of a bittersweet situation, but I'm really happy of being able to give the talks at Libra Planet instead of doing the grind like friends in the tech team are working really hard right now for the event to go really well. So my talk is a little different this year. I titled it Hacking My Brain, I guess more like repairing a problem in my brain. So I'm going to start by explaining what the problem is and some peculiarities of it. It's a very common condition that I have, and I'll explain what I have been experimenting with throughout years, trying to figure it out at first, and then at this point, maybe getting to improve it. So because it has a bit of that type of information, I have to start with the usual disclaimer that I'm not a doctor, and none of the stuff that I will talk about in this talk is medical advice of any type. The software that I made is available online, and you can try it, but of course, like with any other GPL software, no warranty, and you're on your own. I hope that it's useful for more people than myself, and people would give it a try and see what their opinion is, and hopefully get some doctors involved in this. Anyway, so first of all, I have two keyboards and I keep going to the wrong one. So the premise is that I have what commonly is called lazy eye, but the correct name for it is strabismus. There's two overlapping conditions. The first one is physical, and it's the misalignment of the eyes. I don't have a very strong case visually, so it's something that people can tell if I look like this without my glasses, it's more obvious. So maybe you can tell that this eye is pointing a little bit inwards and down instead of straight ahead like this one. So this is usually called the strong and the weak eye, or sometimes or commonly people refer to the weak eye as the lazy eye. So why does that happen in the first place? The most common case is that the muscles that pull your eyeballs around may have some defect, like maybe one is too short or too strong, something like that, and that makes the eye be tilted some direction, so it's not really pointing forwards completely. But there are other reasons that this can happen. You can have some trauma. You can develop it if you have a stroke. There's many possible reasons for the eye divergence to happen, and that's a physical problem in the first place. What happens is your eyes are not both pointing to the thing you're looking at. Only one of them is, and the other one is pointing some other direction. In my case, the problem is that I was born with some defect in the muscles of my, I believe, my right eye. And well, that's exhibit A. That's me at around one, I think. And right after that, I got some treatment for the condition. So you start with a physical problem. And the thing is that at the time when this usually happens, this most often happens in newborns, and your brain is kind of blank. You don't have the software installed yet. So your neural networks need to be developed, and that's it. That the brain needs to learn how to look at things, how to interpret image, how to interpret sound, all the different input that the brain gets. So if at the time when that needs to happen, you have a physical condition that messes with the input, then the brain is going to adapt to this. It's going to try to find a optimal solution to the circumstances. In this case, if your eyes are not pointing to the same object, you're going to see double. You're going to see two things floating that are not really overlapping in front of each other as they should for the brain to interpret them properly. So what's the brain to do in this case? There are several possible things that the brain may come up with. And in my case, we can see an image of an eye here. So we understand a little bit how it works. The green beam is the direction where the eye is pointing, focusing on an object. The projection happens into what's called the fovea, which is a region of the retina that has the most sensors. So that's a very sharp, that's where the sharp details are collected. All the rest of the retina cannot see very fine detail and cannot see in color. Only this region can see detail image in color. In particular, then you have where the optical nerve ends. Because our brains are not very well designed, we are not octopi, they have better eyes than we do, our nerves are in front of the retina. The retina is actually the brown polar part. So where the nerve comes out, you don't see at all. We call this the blind spot. So there are things in your field of view that are the projection of this line that you actually cannot see. The brain is filling up that information. There are some visual tricks. You can look it up and figure out how to make an object disappear from your field of view. Feels kind of weird. But we all have this. In my case, and this is one of the possible solutions that the brain may come up when you have my condition, if you are seeing double, that's most likely going to give you headaches and causing other problems. The brain may want to find a solution to ignore the information from one eye. And the best way to do this is if you rotate the eye inwards, you end up projecting with one eye. Instead of into the fovea, you project into the blind spot. When you do that, whatever the eye is, the strong eye will be pointing at an object. The weak eye would be pointing in a way that the object is projected into the blind spot, so it disappears. And to do that, you have to tilt the eye inward a little bit, this much. And if this was, this is cut from like from the top. If it was cut from the side, you will also notice that the nerve is a little on the bottom of the eye. So to put the blind spot in the correct place, you have to tilt the eye inwards and down. And that's precisely what my eye is doing. It's going this much in and a little bit down. So that's the solution my brain came up with. So it becomes, it starts as being a physical condition, and then it becomes a neurological condition. And the neurological part is called amblyopia, which is when the brain ignores the signal that is coming from an otherwise perfectly healthy eye. You notice that I also have glasses because I have optical problems in my eyes. I have less optical problems that this eye is almost fine. I don't really need glasses on my lazy eye. But the brain is ignoring the image anyway, so it's a neurological condition. It has a lot of consequences. I mean, it's not a very severe condition as disabilities go. I don't consider myself disabled, really. I guess technically I am, but I do pretty well. It has some practical impediments that it causes, and the I guess the most important ones, I never really reflected much about them until I was writing this. Most of the problems come when you're a child and you're learning to use the input that you receive. You're learning to read. You're learning a lot of skills that are visual, and those are pretty hard. You may get bad pattern recognition. I'm terrible at face recognition. I guess I'm sometimes perceived as rude because I don't remember people. I think it may be related to that. Maybe at least that's my excuse anyway. The reading skills, I became eventually an avid reader, but I wasn't right away. And there's more reasons for that that I'll get into. And there's other statistical prevalence of other issues that you can develop as a consequence of the other ones. So what do you do when you have this? First, you treat the body, because this we establish that it starts with being a physical problem. You have to address that first. And for that, you will get either, most commonly, surgery. So they kind of pop your eye out a little, and they took your attachment of your muscles to your eyeball. That's the common thing that it's done. It's tried to lengthen or shorten where those attachments are, and try to make the eyeball point more towards it should be, and then giving it to the brain to pick up from there how to actually align them together. So that's the most typical one. Another method is to get a different type of lens that's not very usual to see around. That's a prism. Instead of being a lens or a spherical lens, it's a prism. So what it's doing, it's turning the direction where the projection of the light is going. So it's equivalent to turning the eye, but it's done with a lens. I've tried one of those. They didn't really work for me. There are some medication you can get for getting the eye straight. You could use Botox to get the stronger muscles that are pulling in the wrong direction to relax and make the eye go some other way. It's not permanent and may cause all other kinds of problems. And then some drugs can temporarily make your eyes point straight. I've never tried that, but it sounds interesting. Then in my case, I got an operation when I was 2, and that actually aligned my eyes. So the most of the misalignment that I had originally went away, and then my brain had to learn how to deal with things from that point on. The thing is, once you've had your brain try to come up with how to deal with the input, with this bias, with this impediment, now what you have is amblyopia. So you need to treat that next. You need to figure out how to tell the brain, look, your eye actually works. You should start using it. And there's several things you can do for this, because the just correcting where the eye is going, if it's done at a certain point, and in my case it was done very early, but actually by 2-year-old, when you're a 2-year-old, you already developed most of the skills for using your eyes. So then you need to kind of move forward. What you do at that point is to get very commonly, at least in my generation, we were given patches and sometimes glasses. You will get like a darker crystal in one eye. And if you were lucky, very lucky in my time, I don't think anybody was doing actually visual therapy when I was a kid in Spain. But if you were lucky, you could get that too. So in my case, I got a patch for a few years when I was a kid. I really don't look happy with it. I hated it. I wore it, I think, it's hard to remember, but around from 4 to 8, which that's when I was developing my reading skills. It was really hard to read with your weak eye. Your brain is actually trying to ignore the information. So this still happens to me when I read with that eye. My brain actually doesn't know how to read with that eye. That sounds kind of crazy, but it's like if I were to write with the wrong hand. You can do it, but it's really, really hard. So I can read with this eye and things are sharp, but my brain is kind of making a mess of it. So it didn't work. And after 8, my parents were told that there was no solution. Like it didn't, using the patch didn't work. That's like a shot in the dark kind of thing that doctors were doing. It didn't work out. And I was told that there was nothing to do. In fact, that was a very long established medical fact that there was no cure after you were, some people would say between 5 and 8, but probably was even earlier, unless you were treated some other way, not just the wearing the patch. Despite this, a few doctors were actually devising some techniques back in the last century to treat the condition. They've, at least in the case of the main one, Frederick Brock, he, I believe, treated himself from these type of conditions and other people and wrote about it, but it was kind of obscure and there were no large sampling studies of any type. There was just some writings by a few of these doctors, and this kind of didn't cause much hope in people. People didn't really know about this. Then in the 2000s, this started to change when both out of a resurgent of the research from Brock and others was found and put to practice, and also new researchers that were focusing on machine vision and computer-aided systems, they started to try to come up with new methods, and they were using video games. So the thing with video games is that give you a lot of control over the input that is being given to the eye in real time. And if you combine that with some sensors, like for example, those researchers would use devices that would track the where your eyes were pointing to be able to come up with some therapies. And eventually when VR came and became mainstream, that started to be used for this pretty much right away, because it allows you to give different input to each eye, and that is available for this type of treatment. So as it often, or we are very used to this happening, when a new application for software appears, somebody is going to try to mistreat people and make a lot of money in the process by making whatever solution they come up with proprietary. And that happened. The examples that appeared from the first researchers in the 2000s that were taking this up, they didn't really publish things in the form of like software for the public. They were publishing papers. That this was all academic. But then around 2014, the first one that was made for the public, first VR treatment system appeared. It was originally called Diplopia, and then it was renamed to Vivid Vision, and it was crowdsourced successfully and then acquired and expanded and became this system of contracts between the company and clinics that are the only ones allowed to give you a copy of the software. And you need a prescription to get a copy of the software, and everything is very tightly kept, so it's not shared. And it's also quite expensive. The price, I couldn't get a straight quote because it depends on what clinic you go to and what insurance you have, but it's quite pricey. And of course, it's all proprietary, and it all uses stacks of software and hardware that are proprietary. So if you get them for this application, you may not be able to use them for anything else, because, I mean, unless you started using non-free software for VR video games and stuff. So the other one that I found, that it came a little later, a few years ago, this one is funny that they say that there's an unlimited license that they have for $5,000, and it's of course limited in that you cannot share it or access the source code or any of the things that we call unlimited or freedom. So knowing this, it all sounded from somebody with this condition, it sounded all very interesting. I was very curious about this. Actually, I applied to the crowdsourced program at the time because they were offering a free demo copies, and I wanted to take a look, but I never got one. In any case, that very quickly derived to going from a more public type of development to something completely obscure. So I set myself to work on it. I first tried in around 2013-14 when a friend gave me the first Oculus and the Oculus Dev Kit 1, a very clunky first attempt at a popular device of this type. And the only thing I got to do with it is take an off-the-shelf free software 3D movie video player that it's in most distributions. It's called Bino or Bino, I guess Bino. And it allows you to play one of those videos that has the left eye image on one side and the right side image on the other in a VR headset, and you could watch it that way. So I modified it so the screens would be in the correct position for my eyes, which is unusual, like having to tilt it up and down and sideways. So I did that, and well, it didn't work. I had to quit using it pretty much right away. I think I got to watch two or three movies. It only fixed that the double vision that I get sometimes went away when I was using it, but everything else was really awful. So I gave up. I was getting terrible headaches. I actually started to see double when I wasn't using them, just out of just a few movies that I watched. So it was pretty bad. And most of the reasons were because of the hardware wasn't ready in the first place. The Oculus development kit 1 had a very, very small resolution. It was very huge pixels. Everything looked super pixelated. You have to think that this is really close to your eyes, and you only really see the center part. So you're using very few pixels to project to the eye. So this resolution is not enough. And it was 60 FPS, so it kind of looks a little jerky in your head. That was part of the problem. But also, I couldn't develop anything significant because you will have to start from scratch. You will have to learn how to write 3D applications from scratch, and there wasn't an actual VR stack. And also, there were some, I mean, I guess it's a little harsh to say this, there were some game engines, I'm not an expert in this part, but really for something easy to use and like very available with a good community, it was hard. So there were some examples of VR integrated games, like things like Neverball and Neverbud that are also in most distributions. Those were made around that time. They managed to make them work, but it was really hard. And I wanted to make something from scratch. So I just didn't have the time also for the amount of investment that will take. So I kind of parked that. I actually gave away the VR headset, and things kind of just went dormant for a while. And now that I got a little of a career change and some more time, I started to look into that again, because now the headsets, like this one I have here, they have very good resolution. This is 4K per eye, which is a huge difference from the previous one. I cannot see the pixels anymore. It's from that resolution up, you just cannot see pixels. So maybe if you have very good eyesight, which I don't, you may see something, but it's really smooth, and it has higher refresh rate, so the movement is smoother, and it has other things like the cameras that allow you to track your room space for being able to move in 6 degrees of freedom that the other device didn't have. So more importantly, now there is a OpenVR stack that is, I'll show you later. It's the kind of, you can think of it as like the drivers for the VR headset. And also now we have a very good game engine that is very simple to use for a newbie like me, like myself, and it has integration with OpenXR. OpenXR is the extended reality, so but the combination of virtual reality and augmented reality. So this plugin allows the Godot game engine to render into a VR headset through using Monado as the runtime. And now also I have some time to work on it, and I started to figure out how to do it. So there are some limitations on Godot. Well, there are some limitations on myself first. So I couldn't go too far with how to make the arrangement for Godot to work for my condition by going and rewriting the engine for two reasons. One is because I wouldn't know how to, and also because I want whatever I make to be able to be distributed easily. I don't want to have a fork of Godot. So in any case, just an introduction, Godot allows you to move forward from having to write all the triangle rendering OpenGL nonsense, and it just gives you a very simple graphical interface to do 3D development. So it also provides a physics engine, object primitives. You can import objects from Blender and things like that. It does a huge array of things. Also, it has a 2D version for 2D games that I don't use myself. And again, OpenXR is kind of like the intermediate thing that goes in between Monado, your runtime, and the game engine. Luckily for me, it's programmed. You make your games in GDScript, which looks almost like Python. It's not Python, but it looks identical. There's a lot of tutorials. There's a great community online. And actually, the VR part of it is being developed very quickly, and new things are coming up all the time. This is a little bit of kind of how the stack of things goes. You have your 3D acceleration drivers, Monado in between, and then Godot, and it's plugging. On Godot 4, I believe that this is no longer a plugin. It's made into Godot, or it's going to be. All right, so then I'm being told that I'm running out of time, so I'm going to kind of cut it short a little bit so I can actually show the demo for a few minutes. What I did was to implement inside of a game a VR headset, because Godot doesn't let me access each of the virtual cameras and move them. What I did was put two screens inside of the game and correct the parallax and the brightness and all of the things that I need to do for the therapy concepts inside of the game. So it's like there's a little VR headset inside of the game, which took me a little while to figure out. It's extremely inefficient, but it works for what I do. So I went with that. I made two applications. One is a 3D movie player that lets me project into something that looks like a cinema with like the curved screen and everything. And you can play 3D movies in there. And also a breakout style game. So I'm going to show them before I run out of time. This is running. So there's a few components here. This is Godot in editor mode, and it's showing the movie player application. And then I have Monado running. It's showing, this is usually what would show inside of the headset, but I have it pull it out so you will see it here. And this is the interface that Monado gives you for tweaking the settings, which we don't really need right now. And so if I launch the game, well, in this case, the movie player, here, this is the Godot debug window. And then this shows just like what would be seen from a virtual camera from inside of the game space. So then Monado takes the input that Godot gives and projects it into the eyes, the virtual eye mapping with this compositor window, and you get the input for each eye with correction for color aberrations and other issues. And I believe I have to restart it because I'm not getting tracking. But it's a second. All right, so I have to tell it to track here and try it again. Of course, it was bound to have some problem. All right, so now you can tell it's moving when I move the headset. And here we should be able to see the projection as it will appear inside of the screen. So let me lower the volume. So this is set for, let's say, normal eyes, like without my condition. But I can enable the virtual headset inside, turn it on, and now I'm able, I hope this is visible enough. If I turn it on, now I can move the parallax. I can move this eye up and this eye down, or the other way around, or horizontally. And this is done to place the screens where my eye is actually looking instead of where it's expected to be because of my eyes pointing the wrong direction. Then it's currently drifting, so I'm gonna have to turn it around. I can stop the drifting in Monado. Let's see, over here. It's because it's only using the gyroscopes and the accelerometer to figure out where it's pointing. There's Monado has progressed to the point where you can use the cameras to track the room. I don't really have time to show that, but you can do that at this point. My applications don't need that at all. You're fine with having your head fixed in space. You can turn it around and look. It's very comfortable. It looks a little weird from the outside, but it makes a lot of sense when you put it on. It just looks like you're sitting on a very dark cinema. So this is one of the two applications, and the other one is a little game that I can show now. See, this is a breakout style game. And here and there. So I'm going to point it forward. So it has. It sets a bunch of blocks, and you break them with a little ball that bounces, and you can move this little disc. It's actually moving with the headset, so you can move the, let's say, paddle by moving the head around, so it's hands-free. And like with the other one, this is currently displaying what would work for a person without my condition. But if I turn the virtual headset on, it's again doing the parallax correction, so I can separate them or put them closer together. So that's for my my case needs them to be more close together, or I can put them up and down. But you will also notice in this case, we have more things going on. The ball only shows on the left eye and the paddle only shows on the right eye. Also, the right eye is darker. This is set for my eyesight in particular. So I want to give my strong eye less input. So I make the eye darker, and I want to show some of the information to one eye. In this case, I show the ball to the weak eye, and I show the paddle only to the right eye. That way, the eyes are forced to, well, my brain actually is forced to coordinate the image that's coming from each eye in order to play the game. If I'm only using one eye, I'm going to lose every time. I need both to help make decisions. So those are the main techniques that are used for this psychotherapy, is to give different input to each eye. The other one is to give different intensity of signal to each eye. And the third type, which I haven't experimented with yet, well, I have experimented, but I haven't made anything usable yet, is to place objects in space that are at different distances virtually, and try to, using just the parallax of your eyes, figure out which one is close to you. They're usually different sizes, so you cannot tell from the size. The big one is further away, the small one is closer to you. So that's the one that I will be working on next. So that was the demo. I believe I have not much more time, but the next steps that I want to do is make depth detection games, the ones that are like those with the distances and sizes, kind of ambiguity, and you have to figure it out. I have to improve the interface a little bit, so you have like a calibration screen for moving things around. And the main one actually is I need to start to collaborate with optometrists and neurologists, ideally, anybody that's interested in this field, so I'm not just working in the dark on this, and the methodology gets validated. And well, I think that if I leave it here, there'll be some minutes for questions. I don't know how long.
Thanks, Ruben. What wonderful. I have a one question from IRC users. It's about your condition, your virtual condition. Here, let me see. O Mendes Morales ask. So using this environment in Godot, has Ruben perceived an improvement in mm-hmm. his visual limitation? Seems solving the text psychological problems he described at the start of his talk.
Mm-hmm. I wish I could say that it has, but I actually just finished this stuff very recently. Mm-hmm. It actually went pretty bad at first when I was first making the in-game VR thing, because the parallax and stuff was so off at first. I was just debugging it. I would get the same terrible headaches that I got those years ago, And I was pretty discouraged because it really reminded me of that failure. And I was like, well, probably should just stop messing with my head this way. But as I finished that step, that went away. And I hadn't started a, let's say, training schedule or anything like that. I'm a little hesitant to do that for some reasons. Well, first is that you could cause problems. You could end up turning the eye on and starting seeing double all the time. That's a very common thing that could happen. You could get really bad headaches all the time. And the other thing is I don't want to just start using it some random amount of time and without some specific targets, because I want to be able to measure the progress. So I haven't come up with that yet. I want to be able to graph through time how much correction am I applying inside, like the amount of distortion that I'm giving to the headset, because the idea is that you will be reducing it with time. So until I figure that part out, I've been reading quite a lot of literature, medical literature about this type of condition, but it's slow progress. I haven't gotten really, the thing that I've gotten is that I can watch a 3D movie in a way that is, like I tend to see double when I see faces, curiously enough, not other objects, but mostly faces. And when I use my system, it doesn't happen, and it's more, it feels nice to watch a movie without that destruction. But I wouldn't say that my eyesight is any better so far. The chances, I've read, there's very few, like this is a very incipient medical field, and people with my level of condition, and I'm self-diagnosed anyway for amblyopia, but I figure that I will have like at least a 50% chance that I will get it corrected. But I guess I'll report in maybe next Liver Planet. by the way, I forgot to say, I don't know if you can read it there, but that's the URL where you can download both of the demos.
Right. Thanks, Ruben. Time is over. thanks for your talk. Thanks for all Liver Planet assistant. Thanks.
Yeah, goodbye. Thanks to you. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah.
Happy hacking.
Bye bye. Happy hacking.